Welcome to Parents' Perspective. What's the matter, honey? Mark turned over and saw his wife sitting on the edge of the bed, sobbing. I can't even begin to explain, she whispered, breathless between sobs. I just feel so very guilty about Owen, and I don't know what to do.
Why do you feel guilty? He sat up and put his arm around her. What did you do wrong?
Oh, I don't know. I really don't, she began. It's just that every day is a mess. There's nothing I can do that doesn't rub him the wrong way. He gets angry and frustrated so easily, and he never follows my directions. So whenever we need to go somewhere, there's a big tug of war about just getting ready. She sighed. At the end of each day, I'm just so grateful when he's asleep. We just can't go on like this.
You're sure that's not just four-year-old behavior, right? Mark gave her shoulder a little squeeze.
Absolutely. I even watched in daycare, and Owen's the only one who seems truly like a handful. All the time.
Well, what do they say in daycare? Mark prompted. They must have dealt with kids like Owen before.
That's just it. The tears began again. They recommended that we get some professional help. They said they couldn't keep him in the class otherwise.
She turned to face her husband.
Oh, what are we going to do?
From a parent's perspective, what should we know about managing a difficult child? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest is an expert in this field. Dr. Georgia DeGangi is a clinical psychologist and an occupational therapist in private practice at Integrated Therapy Services, or ITS, for Children and Families, Incorporated, in Kensington, Maryland, and co-director of the Infant Mental Health Program of the Washington School of Psychiatry. She has extensive experience with diagnosis and treatment of a range of developmental, sensory, behavioral, and emotional problems. Among her many publications is the recent book entitled Effective Parenting Strategies for the Hard-to-Manage Child, co-authored with Anne Kendall. She's internationally recognized as a leading expert in the assessment and treatment of sensory processing, attention, and interactional problems in infants and children. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Dr. DeGangi.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here with you, too.
What are the hallmarks of what professionals would consider a difficult child?
Oh, well, these are children who are very fussy and irritable, just like your example of Owen. And many of them have lots of troubles with self-soothing and depend extensively on their parents to calm them down. The smallest thing can set them off: a change in their schedule, too much stimulation, or being frustrated because something just doesn't go their way. And they often have bouts of intense crying and are very demanding of attention. And unfortunately, as these children grow older, they often become very oppositional and explosive.
When do parents first become aware of these kinds of symptoms?
Sometimes you're aware right from the get-go. They may be children who are colicky, and by 6-7 months, the colic doesn't go away. And in that case, it persists and evolves into this high irritability that can become part of their behavioral and interactional style.
So it sort of sounds like these are children who, for whatever reason, things aren't working out for them in terms of trusting their bodies, in terms of their immediate environment. So it would be natural for them to be unhappy or frustrated.
And it goes beyond just a simple irritability or mood problem. These children often are hardwired to be hypersensitive to the environment or being touched or moved, and that sets them up to become easily overstimulated, and in no time flat, they escalate and then become inconsolable.
What's the biggest myth associated with these kinds of children?
Well, often they say it's just simple colic and that it will go away. But as I mentioned, by 7 months, that's the critical age. If it still hasn't resolved by 7 months, then we need to be taking a harder look at what's going on. Many of these children actually outgrow their fussiness by a year or so of age when they catch up developmentally. It seems like there is a discrepancy in their developmental milestones. They can't walk or talk as easily as they're thinking it's happening. And once everything levels out, the fussiness may go away. Another myth is that these parents may feel their child's purposely being manipulative, that they're doing it on purpose to get their goat. Actually, these children aren't manipulating and understanding that that's what they're accomplishing until they're probably a year or so of age that they understand cause and effect. So they are not doing it on purpose. They are unregulated down to the core. So the other common myth that I hear is, oh, he'll turn out just like Uncle Fred. He was a juvenile delinquent and he had bipolar and this and that. And they have like a forecast running in their head. In fact, these children, they're their own person, and we have to observe them and give them space to develop as they are, as people.
What are the greatest challenges for parents?
I think the hardest thing is being around the constant crying. It's really hard to know what to do to calm them down, and parents deplete their arsenal of techniques very quickly. As part of that, it's hard to stay calm when you're around a crying child and to stay patient and not to lose it yourself as you're trying to figure out, what do I do to console this baby who can't self-soothe? So it's very agitating and it can set you on an edge when you're around this kind of baby. Many parents tell me that they don't trust that to leave their child with someone else because of the risk of abuse is very real. And they're afraid, who could I leave them with? So they may go through a whole lot of babysitters or nannies or relatives that help, and none of them are willing to continue to help them out because they've run out of their patience. So they experience a lot of isolation. They also receive high judgment from other people. For instance, a grandparent may say, you know, if you only you set better limits, if only you forced him to just do this, he would be fine. You dote on your child. Why do you give in so much? And often the parents feel that no one understands what it's like to be around a very irritable child, and it's enormously taxing.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on managing the difficult child.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Georgia DeGangi about managing the difficult child.
You've mentioned self-soothing several times. Would you address that a little bit? What's the difference between self-soothing and a parent finding a way to soothe a child?
Actually, babies from very early on learn to self-soothe, and they do it by things like holding their hands together or sucking on their fingers or looking at their mother's face, and they take it in and they learn that's how you feel calm, and they gradually develop an array of things to do.
What about pacifiers and lovies?
Absolutely. Those are good things for young children, and the pacifier helps through the sucking. Lovies are little transitional objects, we call them. They're little stuffed dolls or a stuffed lamb or something that's comforting to hold. Helps organize the child. It gives them a purpose, something to do.
Is this part of a parent's job at some point early in the game to provide ways for a baby to self-soothe?
Actually, we found through research that a responsive caregiver helps a baby to learn to self-soothe. So parents need to help their child with this task. It's not inherently going to happen unless the caregiver tunes in and notices, hey, he's falling apart. What does he need right now? And take a moment to observe, what should I do? Should I hold my baby right now? Should I just talk soothingly? Should I just wait and let him soothe himself on his own? So those are the sorts of things parents need to be wise about, is tuning into the child's cues.
If you could talk to every parent who's had a difficult child, what's the most important thing you'd want them to know?
Actually, there are two things. Find something you both enjoy. Build on your child's interests. If he has a love of music, do that. If he likes playing with balls and he's a sportsy kind of child, is it playing in water, going to the zoo and the shopping mall? Whatever it is, find out what your child loves and do a lot of it. The second thing is validate your child's distress. This goes a long way when your child feels you get it, that he's distressed and upset. Tell them what he's doing right. Show you understand and you're on his side, that you're a team.
In what way can we do that? Obviously, when the child is one, it's hard to say, we're a team, you know, we're together. Mm-hmm. What kinds of things can parents do that would give a child this feeling?
Well, when you see your child falling apart, even just to take pause and look at them and say, yes, you're really upset right now. You want to play with this, but it's dinner time. I get it. That helps a lot in just allaying the distress, just to take a moment and tune in.
We had an issue when my granddaughter, who's now 6, was 2 years old. One of my sons got married. She was a flower girl. It was very cute. But the next morning, there was a brunch. And she was tired, and she lay down on the floor and threw a temper tantrum. Her dad was standing there trying to talk to her and soothe her, and I said, let me talk to her. And I got down, I said, boy, are you angry? You don't want to be here. She stopped yelling. She stopped kicking. She stood up and said, I want orange juice. And we were fine. And it was so interesting because I never knew that with my own children. I didn't know how to handle those situations. But Sandy and I have interviewed lots of people, and we've learned a lot now that our children are grown-ups. So
that's exactly what I'm talking about, is that kind of responsiveness in the moment and just validating their distress can go a very long way. This is one of the things that I see helps transform a fussy, irritable child, is for them to take charge and not always have the parents engineering the soothing machine, so to speak.
Now, as in our story about Owen and his problems, when parents seek help for difficult children, what do you usually recommend?
Well, I actually have quite a number of ideas. The first thing that I always tell parents is to rule out any medical problems, because there could be an ear infection. There could be something called a reflux. That's like a burning in the esophagus or the stomach. And allergies. Milk intolerance is a big culprit. So that's one thing to make sure there's nothing like that. And the second thing with that is wheat products sometimes can set a child on edge.
This sounds like, by the way, something that before a parent would do that dramatically to go check with a doctor and not just stop feeding the child milk.
Exactly. You want to be sure you've discussed this with the pediatrician, and that's square one. And then the second thing that I like to tell parents is try, if you can, and this is very difficult, to stay calm yourself, because calmness is contagious. If you're emotionally even and calm, then your child will start to feel and sense your slower breathing pattern, your nice calm body, and that will help. And if you're planful about, how am I going to soothe my baby when they fall apart? I know what I'm going to step in and do. For instance, if this is a child who loves to move, maybe I'll get out in the stroller and walk for an hour. I've seen a lot of children who like to be bounced on their dad's hip, for instance, and moved around. Or it could be a baby who likes to have a nice firm touch on their stomach or a back rub. Anything like that. Know what you want to do and plan for it. Then once your child gets a bit older, is help them to do that. Then we go into a common problem that I see, is that parents often overstimulate their child. They say, this doesn't work. Throw that out the window. What can I do next? And so the mantra I like to give to parents is less is better. Do a few things well and do them calmly and let it digest in the child to see if that works.
How long do you wait before trying the second idea if the first idea doesn't work?
Give it a little time. Pause for a few moments and see, because sometimes it takes several minutes actually for something to absorb into the child's nervous system, especially some of these children who have processing problems. They need some time to absorb what you've done for them. So I try to think about 2 or 3 activities in a day, 2 or 3 soothing activities. Less is better. Play with your child at least once a day, 20 to 30 minutes, and things your child loves to do. Find something you enjoy together because that resets your relationship and makes the child happy and for you to see something wonderful and pleasurable about your child. I have a few more ideas. One is to observe your limits. We all have a wick that's only so long. And when you can't take it anymore, tell your child you yourself need a break. If you play with them now, you may not have time to bake the cookies or do something else that they might want. So make time for yourself. Give yourself the breaks you need and be sure you get some respite. Tag team with some people in the family. Perhaps you have a babysitter, the grandparents may come in, another family member to spell you so you get a break. That's very important because you don't want to wear yourself down. And the last idea is give your child structure. They love to know what's going to happen next. It helps to know what's the day going to look like. So sometimes I tell parents, take little pictures or photographs of the day, show them the picture. You're going to go to the playground. And then after that, show the picture. We're going to Nanny's house. Then we'll have lunch and come home. That organizes them and they feel like there's a plan here.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on managing the difficult child.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Georgia DeGangi about managing the difficult child.
It's interesting. I'm going through some of the suggestions you've made, and I'm wondering whether it's not a bad idea to have one of those El Cheapo photo albums that maybe has 8 pages or something like that, and you can stick pictures in and take them out, and you could make a picture of the day that way.
Absolutely. You could Velcro them on. Most kids respond to photographs better than like a little picture drawing when they're very young. And they love it to know where people are going. Like if Daddy's gone off to work, take a picture of him in the car waving goodbye and maybe a picture of him at the office so the little boy can know, where's Daddy right now? It's very organizing. Instead of sneaking out the door and hopping in the car, not saying goodbye, they need to know a formal goodbye. This is where I'm going and I'm remembering you. And to give them something, maybe a little keychain with your picture on it with them, something that they can hold so they know that you are remembering them.
What's the long-term prognosis for a difficult child to adjust to his family and his peer environments?
We've done some studies. When I was at the Reginald Laurie Center.
Can you tell what the Reginald Laurie Center is?
The Reginald Laurie Center for Infants and Children, it's in Rockville, Maryland. And we had a research institute that had funding from federal and private sources that helped us study these fussy babies. And because, I hate to say, I have a historical perspective, I've been around for a bit. So some of these babies I still know, and they're entering college at this point, so I know what's happened to a number of them. And delightfully, some of them have outgrown their irritability. There is a group of them that had mild irritability and a few symptoms, like perhaps they didn't sleep well at night or were a bit sensitive to touch, and they were mildly irritable. And by the time they got to be school age, we discovered they were gifted and talented, very smart, bright children. And some of them are like bursting at the seams to get out. What can I do with my life? And I need to achieve and do. And they're challenging because they need a lot of intellectual stimulation. So that's one group of them that's a great outcome when they're gifted and talented. So that's one group. But then there are some others that are just wired hard. They're constitutionally difficult, meaning that they always are sensitive to touch and movement. Their sound sensitivity is strong. They might cry at the vacuum cleaner or the toilet flushing or a siren going down the street. Those sorts of things disturb them and may load them to the point that for hours later, they're still agitated because of these sensory things. And these children benefit from occupational therapy and having their nervous system reset so they learn how to handle these different things in the world.
Can we back up and talk about the difference between occupational therapy and physical therapy?
The name came during World War II when they were thinking of occupying the soldiers who needed to be rehabilitated. But as occupational therapy developed over the years, they became specialized in something called sensory integration therapy. And that works with children on learning how to process senses and make use of them in positive and adaptive ways. Not that we're removing their tactile defensiveness, but you learn how to cope with it. And you can make it a bit better through therapy. There are also some children that need psychological services to learn how to regulate their behaviors. And they need to learn how to observe their limits and be organized, how to manage when they become dysregulated. So, for instance, one girl I work with, when she blows up, she can pitch a fit, rip a room apart, upend tables, throw chairs. Mm. She loses control completely. So I tell the parents, let Suzanne go outside. They have a treehouse outside. She climbs up there, and the treehouse has a beanbag chair inside of it, and she can organize with her little flashlights. She has a little tape recorder with music. It's like her timeout den. She goes there, regroups, and when she's put back together, she comes back to the family, and then they do something positive with her right away. So those sorts of ideas are things that a psychologist or a counselor can come up with to help you figure out, what do I do in these horrible moments to reorganize and reset everybody's switches so you're back on?
You mentioned something about children who don't sleep well. Mm-hmm. Are there magical suggestions for parents of such children? I would imagine, as a result, the parents don't sleep well either.
Oh, absolutely. These are children that take a very long time to fall asleep and stay asleep. And actually, in the studies of babies, we know that they naturally wake up probably 7-8 times a night. And if the child has what we call a transitional object, their little lovey, if they have something to hold in the crib, that helps them. And so if we can program that in, that they have something to help them soothe in the bed, and for parents not to rush in at the slightest rustling when they awaken. Usually we wait till it's a full-blown scream and they're crying and they're shaking the crib and the whole thing. Then you go in and help settle them and give them back their lovey, whatever they need, and then leave without playing with them or agitating them, setting it up for, it's not wake-up time, it's sleep time. So there are a lot of little tricks, and actually my book has a whole ton of things to do with them to help them learn to separate and feel calm at night.
When and how should parents seek help with a difficult child?
Actually, the earlier the better to prevent long-term problems. So if you can find a place that works with fussy babies, get some help right away. But this can make a big difference in the child's future forecast. And we actually did a study with babies who got early intervention when they were between 7 months and 30 months. And we followed them to see, did it make a difference? And we discovered that we prevented long-term developmental and emotional problems when they were 3, 4, and 5 years old. Not that you can turn the clock and change that from happening, but it may happen anyway that they have those kind of learning or processing difficulties. But the earlier, the better. And if you can't get it then, any time that you can plug in and get the help you can.
You're involved with this infant mental health program. Do you work with infants?
I do. I work with babies as young as newborns, and I work with children and adults all the way up to age 60. Some of my adults are fussy babies grown up, so and they, yeah, still struggle with these things.
Hard to imagine how you can work with infants.
Well, actually, you work through a lot of different ways, through parent guidance. You give parents lots of suggestions so they know what to do when they go home and what to do at those difficult moments. And then secondly, you teach them a special way of playing with their child so they learn to get on board and reading their signals so that it feels like a dance. You're together and the child feels, Mom and Dad are really getting me. They understand me, and they love playing with me and enjoy me. That goes a long way.
We need to know what resources you might recommend for our listeners who want to pursue some of the issues that we've been discussing a little further.
Well, there are a lot of self-help books out there. Among them is the one I wrote, Effective Parenting for the Hard-to-Manage Child, that I co-authored with Ann Kendall. But in my book, there are a lot of resources listed, many of the books that we found helpful. For instance, there are specific books on how to solve your child's sleep problems. Different sensory integration books that are helpful to parents are provided in there. So we've listed a lot of those resources for parents. But suppose you're out there and you really want somebody to help you, a counselor or an occupational therapist, somebody that can help you understand your child. There is a Fussy Baby Network that's national, and it's through the Erickson Institute in Chicago. So if you Google that, it's Erickson, spelled E-R-I-K-S-O-N, Institute, Fussy Baby Network. Go take a look at that and see what local resources there are. Developmental pediatricians or your pediatrician are always very useful.
What's a developmental pediatrician as opposed to a regular pediatrician?
Developmental pediatrician has special training beyond just being a pediatrician on what are the normal and atypical developmental patterns that children go through. And they often give very practical advice to parents.
Well, this has been stimulating and interesting. So, Dr. Georgia Jaganji, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of Dr. Jaganji's book, Effective Parenting for the Hard-to-Manage Child. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 443 and tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Bird and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from you, our listeners. Our sound engineer is Clayton Turner. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.